Well, hey everyone, welcome back to the We Are In Build podcast. I'm your host, Monica Amanda, and I am so excited about this week's episode. As you heard in our previous episodes, our last episode with John, we are interviewing some great men on our podcast to feature and highlight not only their stories, but their perspective on what it's like to be a man today. If you're tuning into this podcast for the first time, I want to give you some info before we dive in. We Are In Build is a nonprofit whose sole mission is to remove that veil for all women. Whether that's fully or just partially, we create a safe place for you to feel seen, known, and understood individually, intentionally, for who you are right now, in process, not perfect. We believe in the beauty of individuality, and we do this by sharing a variety of stories through our platform. On our social media, you can see every day we share a different story on our Instagram. Through our blog, we share different stories. On this podcast, we're sharing stories. And then we also release highlighted stories, which we release curriculum, different resources to help you unpack your story as well. Today is no different. We are talking about Gabriel, his story, the life that he's lived, the struggles he's dealt with depression and anxiety. He really dives in as a male on these topics and gives some really great perspective and unique viewpoints for us as women to love the men around us who may struggle with this and to really just continue to have more grace as we learn to be human together. So this episode is great. It's exciting. We have a lot of exciting things coming for you in the works. Stay tuned, everyone, but I'm going to dive right on into this episode because we have a lot to talk about and I don't want to waste our time. We hope you enjoy and can't wait for all that's to come soon. Well, hey, everyone. Welcome back to the We Are In Build podcast. I am joined today with our male interviewees. So excited today. It's Gabriel Haro. Gabriel, say hi to everybody out there.
What up? What up from Austin, Texas?
From Austin, but you're not from Austin. Tell people where you're from, what you do.
Yeah, so I am, my name is Gabriel. I'm 26 years old. I live in Dallas, Texas, but I grew up in El Paso, which is a border town of Juarez. I am in business. I have a sales company where I import products, goods from Asia, and I distribute them across the U.S. at events or online. And so I guess you can say I'm an entrepreneur of some sorts.
You totally are. You totally are. And what are you passionate about? Give our listeners like a preview of what we're going to be talking about today.
Yeah. So on top of being an entrepreneur, I guess, I have also struggled with depression since I was 14. So that's 12 years of dealing with depression. And so through that, it's generated in me a compassion for people with mental illness, in particular men who struggle with depression. It's such a stigma that is not understood, particularly in men who have not been able to deal with it and don't know how to deal with it. So I have a passion for helping, empowering, and finding hope for those men who are in that battle.
Love it. So good. And I know you know about We Are In Build. And we're going to dive into, you know, just really how we met, all of that fun stuff and why you're here on the podcast today. So just to recap for our listeners, I know this is new for you guys, but we are interviewing men. Starting on our podcast, we did a huge survey on our social media a few months back, and almost 90% of you said you wanted to hear from men on this podcast. And so we're super excited to be featuring some awesome men. I figured why not start with the circle of men that I know who are doing great things, who are amazing. You already heard a little bit about Gabriel, and I'm sure you're so intrigued and interested. And he obviously embodies the heart and passion of what our ministry does, being authentic and in process, and really just sharing our journey and empowering other people as well. And so Gabriel and I met in 2009. Do you remember when we met?
I'm trying to remember. Don't you just put me on the spot.
I totally did.
Did we meet at a party at my house or at church? Mm-mm. Or neither?
Neither. We met. Neither. Wow. Guys, I'm so loved right now.
Don't do that. That's a trap.
Don't do it. It is a trap, but it's fine. I'm not offended. You don't remember. It was at Starbucks. I was supposed to meet.
Oh, yes. No, yeah.
Yeah, you and Grant.
I met you with Grant and you were helping us like develop this breakdown or.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. You came in looking very professional and you had.
Because I thought it was like a real meeting.
Yeah.
And y'all were like, these bros. These are like ragtag teenagers. I was like, who am I meeting with? But you know what's funny is I didn't remember this, but Grant always tells people that day I let him use my car because he didn't have a car. Because you drove him, remember?
Right.
Into the meeting, and he needed a car, and I was like, you can just use mine. I don't care. And he was like, seriously? And I was like, yeah. And he
was like, that was when you had that Pontiac, that red
one. Yes, yes. And so Graham's like, I knew Monica would be my friend the moment she was like, just take my car. And I was like, yeah, I don't care. It's a car, you know? But what's funny is that is how Gabriel is too. The most generous human on planet Earth. And so I'm going to read a little bit about you, give our listeners kind of a summary, and then we're going to dive into some questions to chat a bit more about what you're doing, who you are, and to encourage the women out there listening. So Gabriel never meets a stranger. Just heads up, you guys, we were talking before this about like cells and all of that, and I was like, I need to sit down and learn from you. He's a Texas native, as you guys heard, from El Paso. And when I met him, I think he had just radically given his life to the Lord, and he has never looked back. He was in his late teens. I think you weren't even 20 yet, you know? But Gabriel is really known for his generosity, his passion, crazy work ethic, and recently his vulnerability as a male. Gabriel's journey started 12 years ago with depression, and he has not only fought back to overcome the stigma and just the battle with that, but he's using his voice and his journey to speak up about this topic to help others who are journeying through the same. I'm so excited to dive into his story, ask him some questions. As you all know, stories are our passion and authenticity is in our DNA as a ministry. So without further ado, let's get into it. Let's do it.
Nice.
So I know you, our audience does not, but you are like, when I've seen you posting, and so on, like, Gabriel and I have been friends since 2009, so it's been almost 10 years, y'all, but I've known him this whole time and never known that he struggled with depression, because he has been such a genuine, happy person all the time, so generous. When I say, like, I feel like he would give the clothes off his back to a stranger, always has a smile on his face. So I'd love for you to just give us, you know, a snippet, tell us about your journey with depression, not only like how you recognized it, but maybe even at times when you maybe masked it, like just share with our listeners that journey and what it's been like. Give us a synopsis.
Okay. Yeah. I'd love to. I guess the best way I can paint it, like to put a, like paint a picture in people's heads, because depression is extremely hard to understand if you've never experienced it. And it's hard to explain, in just like everyday terms. And so, like I said, it started when I was 14. And if I can, it was like a baby. keep up with me. It was like a baby was born within my head, but it had no good intentions. And as I grew older, that baby grew as well, to the point where it became more mature. It was older and stronger and wiser and in not good ways than me. And so it was manipulative and it was destructive. And the whole purpose of that person inside my head was to destroy me, was to destroy my dreams, my purposes, and had no good intentions towards me. And it's hard to explain that. I'm that person. It's within me. And so it began when I was 14. I remember the day when the thought emerged in my head that something was off, something was wrong. I was driving, I was in high school. And so when I was a freshman, I used to be the one who would drive us to lunch. So after high school, we would all cross the street, because I lived across the street from the school, and we would grab my mom's van, which we called Mommy's van, and it fit 9 people. And so we would load it up and go out to lunch. And so I remember I was driving, and my friend Isaac was next to me. And I just turned to him and I said, hey, man, like, something's wrong. Something's off. I didn't know what it was. It was completely new to me. And I said, this isn't me. I've never felt this way before. I just feel something is off. And he said, oh, don't worry about it, man. It's one of those days. You'll get over it and you'll be better tomorrow. And I was like, okay, sure, whatever. But no, like, it kept going. So day after day, it was this voice in my head that it wasn't audible. Like, I couldn't hear the voice. It was just like thoughts. And it was this thought that kept saying, this isn't you. This isn't you. This isn't you. This isn't you, Gabriel. Something's wrong. And so you forward time, and this voice began to be like aggressive. it began to attack, and it began to cause doubts and shame, but it wasn't like your normal doubts. It was like debilitating.
Wow.
Debilitating in the sense where you questioned everything. Everything caused shame, no matter if you said something that was encouraging towards someone else. It was always, the thought was always there to debilitate you. So like, for example, you'd get a small example, you'd give someone a compliment and the voice would be like, well, who do you think you are to be giving compliments like that? And it's just everything was, it was there to debilitate me.
Wow.
Sounds and I've horrible. Always been known. Yeah. Yeah. It was bad. But I've always been, like you said, I've always had a positive attitude. Like, I've always been there to help people. That's what kind of what I've wanted to do. So it was like going against who I was. And so there's this battle within me that's happening. And then you forward to 26 and the voice, to 26 to recently, and the voice is still there. And it's, and so I'll get into how I got help and what worked and where I'm at now. But it's just been this, it's a debilitating force within your head. It's hard to explain.
No, I think you explained it well. I think that we all struggle with that to an extent. You know, I think that maybe people haven't had the emotional maturity or like mental maturity to recognize that, oh, this is not just a thought. This is causing, like, our thoughts manifest into action. That's something that one of my counselors has told me a lot, because I've been on a journey of also like controlling our thoughts and our mind and learning how to take thoughts captive. And, you know, the Bible says that, and it seems so easy when you read the scripture, but it's extremely difficult practically to live that out. And so one thing that one of my counselors told me was like, Monica, you think these thoughts, but you don't recognize how they actually manifest into your everyday life and your actions. And here is how they do. Like, here's how what you're thinking actually is controlling what you do in your everyday life, because you're choosing to let your thoughts like grow to maturity in that level. So I love how you painted the picture of the baby and the baby growing up, you know, and it's been 12 years. So this is a 12-year-old child. Like, it's now a 12-year-old, you know, it's not a little toddler anymore. So I can totally see how the progression of how it can really just control almost every part of what you're doing. So I'm excited to dive into what's worked, but I do want to ask this next question because it's so good. And you and I are both Latinos, so we're Mexican American. And I remember meeting you. I was like, man, this guy is my dad junior. Like, I remember being like, Gabriel's my dad, but a younger version. And I've always like viewed you as like such a man's man. You know how our culture is as well. It's so like, you know, the man is the man. He provides, he protects, very strong, very dominant. And so I loved so much. I was like shook to hear you like talking about this issue, because I'm like, you're not only a man like in our culture, but you're Mexican, you know? And I feel like that's even more uncommon, you know, for men to come out and talk about these things. And so I would love for you to just share, even just your journey on that, because, you know, as you know, a ministry, we are unveiled. We're all about removing that veil, being in process with one another, being vulnerable. For women, that's a bit more natural, I feel like, and a bit easier. And I'm not trying to say that it's not difficult to do that for women, but it's seen more for women. And so not only have you done that as a male, but like you've had to overcome cultural stigmas as well with that. So how has it been for you to come out and even talk about your depression? Like, what has made you do it? I know your family and I love your family, so I'm sure they have supported you so much in this, which is amazing and rare. But just share with our listeners a bit about that journey, what that's been like. And I'm sure those thoughts have like even told you not to do it, you know, but I'm so happy that you have. So just share with us, what's that been like as a man to talk about this issue and what's made you do it?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. Good point, Monica. 'Cause it's true. It's true. Females tend more to, I'll explain it this way. There's two types of depression, and one you see mostly in women, not exclusively in women, but mostly in women. And the other depression you see mostly in men, but not exclusive to men as well. And that is the covert and overt depression. Now, for women, they tend to experience overt depression, which allows them, by overt depression is, so depression in itself is anger, not towards others, but towards self. So that anger is turned inwards. But women tend to deal with it in a better way because they have community there. It's a lot easier for women to be vulnerable with one another, to share. And those emotions, although inward, they're able to express them to others. And so the covert depression tends to be a lot of shame and guilt. And the overt depression, I'm sorry, tends to be a lot of shame and guilt that's manifested towards a loathing of self.
Okay.
And men tend to express it outwardly. So I guess it's outward, covert and overt depression. For men, the depression, they can't deal. They have a very hard time because there's a lot of stigmas with emotions, with men and emotions. So men have a hard time expressing those emotions that they're feeling, or those thoughts or those doubts, or that fear or that sadness. And so what men do is suppress the emotion rather than express it to others and talk. They suppress it. But the thing that men and women need to know is that emotions end up coming out regardless.
So good.
And so when you look at when you look at men, men tend to be prone to workaholism, to extramarital affairs, to anger, to rage, to crimes. I mean, I don't think it's a coincidence that most prisons are filled with a majority of men. So men suppress those emotions, but they come out in a plethora of ways, and those are just a few of them.
That makes sense.
And so so you see it, like men will suppress it, but express it in other areas that are not healthy.
Yeah. So what made you then talk about it? You know, like, how did you get to the point to you were like, okay, I'm not going to suppress this anymore. Like, how did you get to that point? Let's ask that question first before we dive into like how you talked about it. But knowing that culturally as a man, the difficulty of that, the realities of that, you know, and as you're saying that, I can see it, like, you know, light bulbs are going off of like, okay, this makes sense for this person or that person in my life, right, all of that. So how did you get to the point to where you were like, I've got to not suppress this anymore?
Man, that's the hardest part. I think a driving force for me was realizing that I wasn't the only one in that position. That there was other men out there experiencing what I was experiencing who didn't believe there was a way out, or there is a way out. And I guess I'll put my dad up there. Because my dad's one of those men who's always been a provider, who has always been there for us. Supported us in every way. We never needed anything. We always had food on the table, a roof over our head. Always hard. If there's something I learned from him, is work ethic. The man works. But what we did lack from my dad was that emotional connection. It was that affirmation. And so I see it in me because I never understood why I was so sensitive growing up. It was a strange dichotomy or a strange, it was strange because I was a leader of the group. Like I had a lot of friends and I was a leader of the group, but I was also sensitive. And so someone would tell me something and it would get my feelings hurt. And I was always a class clown. And I never understood why. I never understood why I was like that. And I always thought it was something that was wrong with me. But last couple of months, I've understood that it was, I never had that emotional connection. So I was looking for it elsewhere. And that was a very vulnerable spot in my life.
Yeah.
It's hard to be a man who people look up to, but yet be a man who yet doubts himself so much and has that pressure of the depression to deal with. So it was a desire to see other men freed from that. And I had to get over myself. I had to say, this isn't about me. There's a bigger mission than me. There's thousands of men out there who need help.
That's so good. And I think what you're saying is so important. I think as women, this is why I love having a man on the podcast to talk about a variety of things. And it's really opening our perspective to understand. I think as women, we really misunderstand how hard it is just to be a man. You know what I mean? Like, in general, like not just even in our culture today, like not even like take out being a godly man, you know, and a man of good morals and values and convictions, like take all of that out. Just being a man in general is difficult in our time and age. And so I think what you're hitting on is so important. And I think a lot of our listeners can even relate to this, that if we're not able to express our emotions and have our emotional tank filled, then that's going to hinder us as we mature into adulthood, you know? And I think it's so, I love that you said, you know, you were sensitive and you would get your feelings hurt and all of that, but you realized it was because you were looking for that affirmation in someone else. And so I think that that's also like huge for us as women to recognize too, because we do that as well. And that cannot come from anybody, but obviously the Lord, you know?
Right.
But then that's also hard because he's not real, you know, like he's real, but he's not like human in front of us, like speaking. Mm-hmm. So that can also add to the difficulty. But okay, so let's dive into this next question. So you shared, you know, you decided I got to get over myself. There's other people who are struggling with this. It's not about me. Mm-hmm. And I know that God is already using you and going to use you so much because you're choosing to step out and talk about it. But what has been the best part about talking about this for you? And then I'm going to add on the flip side, what's been the worst part about, like what's been the hardest part about talking about it?
The best part is that the more I talk about it, the less it has power over me.
Yes.
It's been liberating to be able to share with a complete stranger that I've never met, that I've struggled with depression, and oftentimes get the me too, the, oh, I deal with that too. That's been the most liberating part, to be able to talk to people and by being vulnerable, allowing them to open up. And it's been men, older men, younger men, women, all ages who have found the comfort in that. And it's part of the mission. It's setting people free.
Yes. Okay. What's been the hardest part?
The hardest part for me is the fear of the depression taking the grip of me again, as much as it had at one point. And the fear of accomplishing so much, and yet then the depression coming back and then just all falling apart. That's been the hardest part.
There's a quote, and I'm going to butcher it, but at our retreat, one of our girls, we were talking about our core values. Like, what are core values that we want to live by and do life by? And one of the girls said fearlessness was like one of hers. And she said, you know, she defined it as like when I want to find the quote because I'm going to butcher it so much. Okay, I found it. She said, fear is a natural reaction and emotion. It's okay to feel fear, but what makes you fearless is to look that fear in the face head on without hesitation and dare it to do its worst. Like, fear only has its power. Like, fear is truly paralyzing, which I've realized in my life, you know? It's genuinely paralyzing and in the same way debilitating, as you've stated before, how depression can be. And so I've learned that if I just keep going and press into that fear, like everything I want is on the other side of it. And so I love that you even said, you know, your freedom and victory is by talking about it, sharing about it, how it doesn't have as much power. And it is the unknown is what's scary. You know, it's not what it can do. It's like the unknown of like what will happen. And it's not going to go away. I think something that we often confuse as Christ followers is that because I know Christ, I will no longer struggle with, you know, anxiety or fear or depression. It's like, no, Christians and non-Christians alike still struggle with that, you know?
Exactly.
We're human. That doesn't go away because we follow Jesus.
Right.
So I think that I love how you just said, you know, talking about it has been the best thing. It's been freeing for you. Recognizing that there is still, you know, fear there, but not letting that fear keep you from that. And as you were like saying you talk to people, I just in my mind got this picture of like, I'm sure people get so relieved. Like, I'm sure a weight's lifted off their shoulders when you talk to them and tell them your story that so that they can tell you yours, you know, tell you theirs. And who knows if they've never had a chance to talk about it. And now they're like, oh my gosh, I'm not alone. I can now talk about this with someone. So
right.
I love it. So what's next? What do you dream to do with this? How do you aspire to help people in depression?
Yeah.
Your car got broken into, but tell us what's next. Tell our listeners what happened to you.
Oh, man, you can't leave them with it. Yeah, it got broken into. They stole everything.
I can't believe that.
But, hey, that just means we got to grind harder now.
The devil's a liar. That to me says you're on the right track. Like,
wow.
More than anything, I'm like, really? You think you're going to stop him? No, Satan, we're coming back. Come back.
Yeah.
So what's next? Tell us.
All right, so what's next for what I want to do for others is what was extremely helpful for me. So in the state of depression, I had a gentleman by the name of I won't name him just to because I haven't asked him if I can.
Yeah.
But it was an older gentleman, successful in his businesses, and for some reason he took an interest in helping me out and kind of mentoring me. And so one night, I couldn't take it anymore. The depression was like just too much. And I said, I need to talk to someone. And so I called him and I said, hey, I need help. This is too much. I can't do this alone. I need your help. And I just remember him saying, we are going to get you out of this. And it was so powerful. He sat me down and he said, this is just an allergy. It's a serious one. Depression is serious, but it is curable. It's treatable. And in 3 months, we're going to get you out of this, Gabriel.
Wow.
And I just remember feeling empowered, feeling like I believed him. Because keep in mind, this is 11, 12 years of dealing with it. So I think I had heard of that before, but it never hit the core of how he did it, what he said. It's like he knew exactly what I was going through. And so the next day he emailed me counselors' numbers, psychiatrist numbers, and he not only did that, but he did all the work. He got in contact with the counselors, he got in contact with the psychiatrist, he had them call me, set an appointment, he followed up with me, made sure I went.
Wow.
He paid for my first session.
Oh my gosh.
He said, I'm going to pay for your first session. And within 3 months, you're going to see Gabriel. You're not going to be dealing with this anymore, or it's just going to be in the past. And so what he did for me was he facilitated the process of me getting help, because the hardest part for me at the time was to ask for help. That was the hardest part. The hardest part for someone who's depressed is asking for help and seeking out, because it's just extremely hard. And so he facilitated the process, literally did everything for me. And he was wise about it. He knew what he was doing, and it helped. It worked. He was right. Within 3 months, within a month, I started to see the light. I started to see hope. And just the vision began. Like the vision. So my vision is my mission. Is I want to help facilitate the process for people who struggle with depression to get help. And this is a new vision. I don't know what that'll look like, but the vision is to facilitate the process. So once someone seeks help or asks for help, for us, for me, for whatever I'm creating, to facilitate that process, to get them to the right counselor, to get them to the right psychiatrist, to pay for their medication if they don't have money to pay for medication,
Gabriel, this is awesome.
Walk walk them step by step, side by side, to get help. Because, like I said, the hardest part is to ask for help.
Yeah. Not only ask for help, but if you're depressed, like genuinely depressed,
yeah,
you're not going to like want to get out of bed. You're not going to want to like pick up the phone. You're not going to want to Google nothing, you know?
Exactly.
And I think people don't realize that. So
exactly.
That's amazing.
That's, you are correct 100%. That's
wow. So and, what's been like the biggest thing you've learned? Like you've gone through this whole thing, like before we dive into like these We Are Unveiled questions, I'd love for you to share maybe what are like the biggest tips and tricks or like some practical takeaways if our listeners are listening and they're like, that's me, like I'm him, mm-hmm. I need help, you know, beyond like going to a counselor before that, like what are like some really healthy first steps for someone to take and like some practical tips that you learn to start mm-hmm. moving towards a healthier lifestyle?
Gotcha. Well, the first step is to talk to someone, to confide in someone, if to open up to someone about it, and just trust that they'll be receptive of it, and just know that there's hope that this that they're not the only ones who are going through it, that there's other people out there who have experienced it and conquered it, or maybe dealing with it still, but manage it, that there is hope, that there is a way out, and just to find someone to talk to about it. And then the following steps, I would encourage therapy, counselors, and if needed, medication.
Love it. So good. Thanks, Gabriel. This has been like, I feel like we could talk about this for another 30 minutes, but
yeah.
You know, we're honoring our time here, honoring our time. So
got it.
We'll ask a last question about any encouragement you want to give to the women and men listening, mm-hmm. but I want to dive into some We Are Unveiled specific questions. So as you know, we're a women's ministry with an audience that's primarily female. In light of mm-hmm. the reality of the world that we live in, many women as well that I've spoke to and interacted with, they can say that there are no good men out there, you know, that all men suck. Like,
right.
And that also, I think, comes into play because at churches, the ratio of women to men is like 10 to 1. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I think they think that too. But the reason why I wanted to feature men on this podcast, and I was so excited that women were all for that, is because I really wanted to shed light on the reality of all the amazing men that are out there that do exist, who love the Lord, who are living their life on mission. But I also wanted to give us women a better insight on the reality of what it's like to be a man today, a millennial man, you know, and what can we do better as women to really love the men around us well, to encourage them, to really build them into the men that God's called them to be. And so these next questions are really tied to that.
Mm-hmm.
Be open, be honest. We want your feedback as a man.
Yeah.
And it's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. So you've kind of touched on this in our interview so far, but what is it like to be a man today in our world? What are the pressures, the fears, and the realities that you face?
That's a good question. Though I think the personally, this is me personally speaking about me, is being content with who I am, where I'm at, and what I've accomplished thus far. And it's going to look different. Everyone's in a different journey, but that place of being content. And I don't mean content in the sense where you're complacent, where you're not striving to get better, where you're not striving to succeed, but being at the core okay with who you are. And not seeing the successes of others as threats, but as opportunities to better yourself. The hard part is when you, like people say Instagram is bad because it projects a life that people don't have. And I don't necessarily agree with that, because that projection is only the way you see it. If that projection of other people's lives is causing you shame and it's causing you guilt and it's causing you remorse, then what we need to work on is ourselves.
That's
and not
good.
Try to change others.
Yeah.
So finding, it's a hard question, because now you get to how do you do that? And it's a process. I think it's realizing, like, I need to be okay with who I am, where I am, and what I'm doing. Of course, if it's moral, if it's good, but I'm talking about who you are as a person, that your essence, like being okay, not needing to believe that you need to accomplish something to be better. And that can lead to a whole nother area of dialogue, because then we talk about,
we'll leave it at that. I love it. I think it's, I can't imagine what it's like to be a man today. I say all the time, like, thank you, Lord, I'm a female, mm-hmm. because I feel the pressure, you know, for y'all sometimes. But I think that you really hit the nail on the head. It's more of just really being content in who you are and finding your identity and that being firmly rooted and planted so that you're not so easily influenced by things around you. But just happy, you know, mm-hmm. with who you are. I love it. So what can we as women of God be doing right now to better love the men around us?
Try to understand. Just try to understand behaviors. Try to understand comments or things that men do in their life. Rather, try to understand to know the reason. For example, I always thought my dad didn't care for us, or because I didn't understand that his childhood was pretty harsh. And so when you begin to understand, you begin to empathize. And when you begin to empathize, that the empathy is what causes change. It's not our criticism, or it's not our observations of what people do wrong that cause change. People never change when you tell them, when you point out what they're doing wrong.
That's so true.
Seldom they do. When you say you're doing this wrong, people, they just grip it harder, and it creates a wall. It creates a barrier where they're not going to change. And so it's understanding. It's try to get to the root of why the men in your lives and are the way they are.
And what would you say is the best way for a woman to approach that? Because sometimes as women, I'm saying for myself included, mm-hmm. And I've seen it with other friends, it's like, we know there's a root issue, but then it's like, how do we address it or talk about it? Gotcha. Because we don't want to like demean or shame, mm-hmm. or you don't want to get them like super defensive, like when you ask a question. So what would you say, like, what's the best approach that you've seen? And like starting that conversation or having that dialogue to understand.
Okay. My suggestion is don't do it while you're angry or frustrated. And that's extremely hard, because most of the time that's when we jump into an argument or something. We point out something that bothers us. That's when we're either angry, frustrated, we lash out. So
yeah.
Although it's the hardest part, my encouragement is to wait until the waters have settled, and then be transparent, be open, and say, hey, obviously something's wrong. This is causing me whatever it is it's causing you. And I need to understand why it is that you do that, or why it is that you are like this. Can you help me understand? And the reactions might not always be one of reconciliation. They might lash out. But you have to be responsible with how you initiate the conversation.
Totally. I have found, I've done this the wrong way a lot, and I'm sure you can attest to this, Gabriel. Whenever we were friends, I was like, I was not good with my words. I would just say whatever I thought. But I've learned now, too, that it does have to happen when you're not angry, like 110%. And beyond that, I've learned that if I sit down, this is something my counselor told me, like, if you sit down with that person and say, hey, I love you and I'm for you, like, my heart is 100% for you, I'm not talking about this because I don't love you and I don't care about you. It's because I love you and care about you. And I want it, you know, I want to ask you a question about this. And yeah. That's the posture. If you explain the posture on which you're going into it, I feel like that also really helps, like
right.
with some wall, like for some walls to come down. Like then I have found that men are not on their defense as much when right. you do that versus like being, aggressive, you know, and be like, what's wrong with you? Like, that's not going to yeah. work, ma, you know, like they're not going to respond well to that. So awesome. And what are some things to like, in light of that question, like what are some things maybe that you see that women are not doing well, you know, or maybe just like, you've been around a lot of women, you've grown up in the church, like things that women can do well, but what are some things that you would say like, hey, maybe we're oblivious to the fact that we're doing this and we shouldn't do it in order to like love the men around us, you know?
But to first know that no one is perfect. Mm-hmm. No man out there is going to be able to fulfill those longings of the soul. Yeah. As we know, that's only something God can do. And, so not to set these expectations that a man is there to fulfill those needs, to be independent of that, like not to need it in your life to feel fulfilled.
Yeah.
First, you need to be okay with who you are before bringing another person into fixing who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's the same with men. It's the same with men.
Mm-hmm. So good. So, and I know, we talked a little bit about expectation too. So I love that you said not expecting perfection, not going into, you know, relationships romantically, friendship wise with an expectation, because that really sets everybody up to fail, you know?
Right.
Love it. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're running out of time. Is there any, encouragement or like word that you'd like to say to women listening, maybe about your journey, just anything positive that you'd like to encourage the women on?
Perfect. If you're a reader and you want to understand more depression in males, if you have someone in your family, your dad, your siblings, friends, and you want to understand more of the process of how males go through depression, I would highly, highly, highly recommend. I can't stress this enough. Highly recommend you buy the book ASAP, and it's called "I Don't Want to Talk About It." By Terrence Real. It's "I Don't Want to Talk About It" by Terrence Real, and it's understanding the secret legacy of male depression.
Wow. I'm about to write this down and get this book. Okay, let's dive into some fun questions. These are like rapid fire. Just answer with what first comes to mind. So coffee or tea?
Coffee for sure.
How do you take your coffee?
Black.
Really?
Yep.
Your girl needs all the cream and sugar in her coffee. I cannot. Okay. What book would you recommend to our listeners? Oh, you recommended that one, but another one.
On what? On the topic of depression, on business?
Anything. What's a book that you love that you would say everybody needs to read it?
Oh, Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell.
I haven't read it. What's it about?
Oh, it's great. It's, understanding that success a lot of the times isn't just due to talent, but also has to do a lot with the environment, the time you grew up in, when you grew up. Even to the point like the year and the day that you grew up. That has a lot to do with attributing to the success of the individual. So it just shows you that it's not accurate that only talent is what causes success, that there's a lot more to it.
Wow.
And it's encouraging.
Well, I'm going to read it. I have books to read now.
Perfect.
I listen to books. I'm an audiobook person these days because I don't have time to be reading and thumbing through pages, but I'm going to get this.
Yeah.
Okay. Who should we be following on social media? Think about it before you answer that. If you guys want to keep up with Gabriel, his Instagram is G-I-H-A-R-O, G-I-H-A-R-O. And you can follow his journey. He's posting videos, talking about things, and connect with him there. But who else should we be following on social media?
The first person that comes to mind is Gary Vaynerchuk.
Who's that?
He's an entrepreneur. and he...
He's
just an entrepreneur from New York, and he's just
sassy,
raw.
He's sassy, everybody. He's very raw.
He's raw.
But he says the best stuff.
Yeah.
He does.
So him, yeah.
Okay, love it. And then who should we be listening to music-wise?
Man, I don't think I'm the right person for that. I just listen to... what do I listen to, man?
Podcast.
Okay. If we're getting into the topic of understanding men.
Yeah.
It's called, what is it? Wait. Hold on. No, The Art of Manliness.
The Art of Manliness. That's a podcast?
Yeah. That's a podcast.
Done. Gonna subscribe right now. Mm-hmm. I'm learning so much, Gabriel. Wow. My husband's going to be so grateful.
Yeah.
He's going to be like, wow. I said, yeah, I took time, honey. I took time. Subscribed. Done. Love it. Well, thanks for joining us today. This has been so fun. It's going to be a good episode. So excited for our listeners. And again, if you want to connect further, you can find him on Instagram at GIHARA. Thanks again, Gabriel.
Great. Thank you, Monica.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the We Are Unveiled podcast. To stay connected to all things We Are Unveiled, follow us on social media at We Are Unveiled. Visit our website, www.weareunveiled.com, or shoot us an email at hello@weareunveiled.com. We can't wait to chat with you soon in the upcoming weeks. We have a lot of exciting things happening. Be sure to stay connected. We love you guys. Hope you're having the best Friday, and we'll talk soon.